Okej. 1, 2, 3. Sådär, ja. Hej allihop. Hoppas ni har haft en bra dag hittills. Ja. Tror Brad och de andra som har hållit keynotes har nog haft ganska mycket att säga till om hur viktigt det är med säkerhet. Jag fick en liten sån här reflektion under lunchen. Folk kom och sa, okej, alla säger säkerhet så tillsammans med någonting annat. Tidigare har de bara sagt det där någonting annat. Så har de skippat säkerheten nu. Säkerhet i varenda slide. Vilket vi är glada för. Det här är nog de orden som vi börjar på svenska i alla fall. Sen växlar vi till engelska. För då så har vi blivit sagda att den här sessionen ska köras på engelska. So.
Yeah, weren't you supposed to speak English, man?
Yeah, I guess so.
Did you get like...
Yes.
Maybe you're Swedish.
Twisted to English or Swenglish.
So anyhow, yeah, welcome to this session about basically securing privileged access. And what we're going to do is we're going to demonstrate some modern security concepts by Microsoft that will show you how you can create a more secure environment, especially for administration. And the reason we think this is important is because of the fact that me and Assign has participated in more than 1,000 penetration tests. And we have done a large number of investigations, including investigations towards government agencies, banks, and others, where we see credential theft being the one thing that is always a very important part of any intrusion. I would say they are in every advanced attack, and many of the less advanced attacks. I would say the only time they don't use it is when they're just going to like ransomware a computer. As soon as they want to leverage their access into the network, they would use credentials. So that's how important this is.
Yes.
And the focus of this session is to talk about security features, but we're going to kick off with some hacking demos just to give you the big picture of why this is important.
Yeah.
Would that be okay? Or should we skip them? Okay, yes, checking.
I guess people want to see how the bad guys are doing.
Yeah. So, first of all, I mean, there are some, depending on who you are, whether or not it's news or not, but there are some realities that we need to understand today. People don't use binaries anymore that will just install themselves on the operating system. They will basically run things in RAM. Almost every attack nowadays will just run in RAM directly, and that is because people use PowerShell. So PowerShell being the most advanced scripting language in Windows, of course, and the fact that you can use PowerShell to invoke .NET code, and you can use .NET code to invoke shell script, which means that you can basically do anything through PowerShell. So looking at that, what could you do? In one example, to show you the power of PowerShell, I have a server in Azure. Of course, we're very big on Microsoft here at the Microsoft convention. So I have an attack server in Azure. And it's kind of interesting because in the Azure store, you can actually boot up a Kali Linux attack platform. It's one of the ready-to-go machines that you can boot up. So you don't even have to install it. You just have to basically subscribe to that particular virtual machine.
It actually doesn't say hack in the description of that VM template. It says it's a forensic tool.
Yeah, it's a forensic tool, okay. So it's okay. So what this forensic tool is doing, this is sitting in Azure right now, and I'm running Metasploit, which is basically a toolbox of different attack tools. I would say this is almost old-fashioned, but I think it's so good for demo because it's free to use and available to everybody. And I will trigger PowerShell on a client to connect to this attack platform on the internet. And I can do that in various ways. One way would be through some USB device, which is always a nice demo. So just as an example, I'm leveraging PowerShell here.
Or anybody want to try that on your computer?
Yeah, sure. If you want, you can try it on yours.
No volunteers? No.
I did find some volunteers before that are still hacked, so we can use them. So this PowerShell will run, and eventually, depending on the network, a new computer will register up here. And I can even take this out after the PowerShell is running. So it's going to come in less than a minute. Another way of doing it is actually using macros. Those are the most common models of deploying this malware today. So if you look at the developer in this macro, you can go to macros, open and edit, and you will see some PowerShell running here. I don't know how often you open the developer context and look through it, but this is a fully fledged pre-stage here that will load a Metasploit Trojan into memory using PowerShell, not touching the hard drive, more than PowerShell does automatically whenever you run .NET code. So after these are connecting, as you can see now, there are new connections here. Then you can interact with them. So I can do sessions, interact with session, let's say 13. And then you can do something like webcam, stream, just an effective demo. And then you can sit on the internet and you can, for example, watch who's next to me. Did you run it? Yeah, he ran it. he used his.
Okay. I just connected to mine.
He put in his computer. I was like, that's not me. I look better than that. Depending on taste, of course.
So if anybody wants to have free of charge remote support by Marcus.
That was actually funny. So let's move down the ladder. I mean, this is just to show you the fact that this can be a very realistic attack where you have stuff staged in Azure. I mean, I don't think you block Azure from your firewalls. And the fact that you can run stuff straight from RAM. This is something that modern antivirus don't detect. Even the new AMSI features can actually be disabled. As of right now, it's going to change. So I can circumvent all that. There's no antivirus in the world that will stop my attack. Trust me. I am to be trusted. So next step, we're going to just see how we can leverage this into an attack that will later be very important where you come to the concept of protecting identities. So we're going to look at a scenario where we have an environment with some more systems on it. So you're on the attacker, and you get evil code into one client. The question is, of course, what's going to happen next? So some simple basic concepts before we start doing all the security. We're going to see what is typical from the even from the attacks we see today, what's going to happen next. And one thing that is very common, if we go back to a more of a demo environment, not the real systems, then we have an attacker here waiting for connections, just like I did on the other server. So I'm going to set this up to listen using a multi-handler. Actually, I'm going to use another one just to make it a little faster. I'm going to run my continuous handler. So basically what this will say is, listen to reverse HTTPS connections over port 443. That's also interesting because this will be SSL traffic. So I'm going to tell this to run. So now I'm setting up Metasploit to listen to anyone who will connect using a Meterpreter or Metasploit Trojan on this system. I'm going to see if I can make this a little bit more visible. I would like to change size. So here the handler is waiting. So next step would be again to infect the client. I'm not going to show you how to send an email. I think you know that already. So we're just going to go to client and connect. So this is the client. And the user's name is user, and can you guess the password? We actually came from Redmond, from working there last week, and we were talking to the Microsoft research team about passwords. It's kind of funny, they say if you have parentheses in your passwords, you will not be hit by any of the attack, brute force or word lists that are out there today in any modern attack tool. If this gets too well known, of course it's going to get included. By as of today, if you just put parentheses in there, you have the safest password. Funny, huh? So I'm running this again, this IT security report, checking on the other side, on the attacker, and I now have an interpreter. So this is how easy it was to hack him. Now I'm going to do sessions, interact. I'm going to jump into the Trojan on that computer. And then I'm just going to do a key scan underscore start. So I'm just going to log keystrokes. And what's interesting here is that when we see attacks in the real world, they do this a lot. And they do it on jump servers and stuff. So they attack some jump server infrastructure, and they will log all the keystrokes. Can you imagine what they get there? Like masses and masses of clear text admin passwords, especially in large environments. We see this in investigations, even with the most advanced malware out there. Running nation state is still going to be simple keystroke logging. Why? Because it's so efficient. So next thing is going to happen is probably that this guy, the client, is going to do something like net use, if this is an IT guy, backslash 10.10.10.110, slash u colon administrator. And then it's going to enter some password. You know the password they use, huh? Or password, and then they're going to do whatever. Well, it worked. So we have made a log on. Running the key logs, a keystroke logger on the other side, we can do a key scan underscore dump. And depending on latency, we will get IP address, username, and password. All that authentication. And I mean, there's no magic going on here, but this is still how it's being done. So even run as and stuff, if you're running username password combinations on a compromised machine, that will lead to someone owning that session. So I can background this. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to try use that connection that was done towards that system. So it's basically just taking those credentials and use them the way he did. But I'm going to use this tool built into Metasploit, the SMB PSXX. So I'm going to tell, connect to that host, use this administrator and password that he did, and use it to install the interpreter agent. So funny when it fails, because it usually works the second time. How fun is that? So now I have a session 2 opened. So now, if I do a get UID, I am now authenticated not as an admin, but as a system, because it's automatically updated. When you go in as admin, you become system. And then I can do a sysinfo. And I will now know that I am on a Windows Server 2012 R2 called Server 110 in the Etherip domain. So my next step from here would be to see if there may be a domain admin logged on, because now I have the credentials of a local system on one computer. So I own this box. This is the client. And I used it to connect here. And now I own this one as well. And it's kind of funny if you see how fast this goes. If you're on the right box, this is how fast the attack will be. We have done pen tests where we have compromised the entire environments in 1 hour without being sluggish, still controlled. So next step, looking at this guy, just to save some time, I'm going to do PS And I'm going to move into the Elsass process, the process that I trusted to store secrets. So the process on this guy, the Elsass, is stored in PID 516. That's the process identifier. So I'm just going to migrate into that process, 516. So what's happening now is the Trojan that had its own process is now going into the Elsass process. And when he is inside that Elsass process, he can read the process memory. And that memory will store password hashes of anyone who is logged on, for example. So just to save some time, I'm just going to run Metasploit binaries. You can run Mimikatz, one of the best password hash extraction tool out there. You have PowerShell implementations of Mimikatz. You don't have to touch the hard drive running Mimikatz. I'm just going to do it the old school way because it's faster right now. So I'm going to go into shell. And I have prepared this, so I have a version of Mimikatz. Metasploit supports copying of file and stuff as well, of course. But I'm just going to do, isn't this not the shell? Shell? Shouldn't say, yeah, there we go. CD / demo. And then we're going to do Mimi. And then you get the secrets of this computer. And among those secrets, you will see the administrator of the Ethereum domain, and this is his empty hash. So this is the password equivalent on the system. Then you can do the same thing again. You can use these credentials to connect to the domain controller, since that's a domain admin. So my last step would be just to use, said administrator actually, to use that password hash the same way, same module, but instead of using a password, I'm going to put the hash in there. And then I'm going to exit here. And I'm going to do background, because I'm going to move out of that Trojan. It's kind of interesting, because I can do sessions, and I have access to all my hacked computers. So I will just build up a catalog of computers that I can jump in and out of. And then I'm going to hit the domain controller. And now I have a session 3. And this is the domain controller, get UID. Sysinfo. Just to finish this demo off, I can now simply get the hashes of all the users in the entire domain. That's going to do the same thing. PS, check the process of the Elsass, which is 516. Migrate 516. Come on. Thank you. And then I'm just going to do hash dump, which will take the local hashes of that system. So if this was a real corporate domain controller, this would have had thousands of username hash combinations. And then I can just use them to connect to resources and impersonate any user. Of course, if you own the domain controller, you can do whatever you want to anyway. But this is a way to completely compromise the security of an entire corporation, using their credentials to connect to applications and just impersonating them. Anything that is single sign-on with Microsoft or that you can run a keylogger on any client that will then authenticate to any other system, whatever that was. You get it? So, even though we've been talking about this for years, we can still do it in basically every pen test. We'd still see the same technique in every intrusion. So the question is, what tools and what methodology does Microsoft provide in order to help you finally mitigate these problems? Mm. And that's where science is going to cut in
and
help you guys out.
So I guess, thank you, Marcus. So I guess most of you guys are very comfortable with this portion of this slide, right? You use your user workstation, you jump to your jump servers or admin stations or whatever that is, and you control the different assets you have on your on-premise or cloud or hybrid infrastructure. But what Marcus did just, he jumped in into that user space as the attacker and took it over from there and then had as much access as the admin himself or herself had to their own environment, right? So this is something we need to deal with. This is something we need to manage a bit properly to get rid of the problem. So I want you guys to just understand this slide before we go to the next ones. So a clean source principle is very important here. This is simply, if you don't trust the management station you're running off, if your user workstation is not trustworthy enough, then nothing beyond that will be more trustworthy than the initiation point itself. So if somebody else controls your workstation, that somebody can do whatever you can do. They can listen on the keyboard, they can take a look at your processes, they can jump into the processes, they can steal all your credentials, they can control all these systems you're controlling. So whatever you're in charge, whatever you have in terms of privilege levels, the attacker, the intruder will have the same privilege level as you do. So it's very important to establish a trustworthiness of the workstation you're using before going anywhere else in this discussion. And I guess this is the most critical and maybe the most important part, that we need to start thinking of having dedicated admin workstations. Because if we still go with our regular workstations, we go and visit websites, we might be downloading things, double-clicking things, documents, macros, etc. We are exposing our valuable credentials to different sets of risks. And that's where the attackers will get in and then control our credentials or get hold of them and then go further into this and control our workstations and servers.
Yeah. And it's so sad. In the last huge investigation we did, which was a really, really big, it was nation state sponsored. So it was a Chinese government agency that broke into this environment. And there was actually a logon used in the attack that was standing out. We could see that this was used by the threat actor. And that is, of course, the logon of a user. It was an admin in this case. And that guy got suspected for being a part of it. Of course he wasn't. His credentials were stolen. But it's another problem with this whole thing. If you have weak protection of your identities, then people will see that this guy was logging on doing things. Hmm. So that's another reason that it's horrible to see these investigations where these people get called out for no reason more than the fact that their identity was used. So that's another reason to really think about the importance of this, to protect your own colleagues and employees and yourself.
Good. Other two things we need to start thinking of. Our management systems, those systems controlling other systems we have. I guess for sure that some of you guys are using System Center, others maybe started using Intune and so forth. So whatever management system you happen to have, those systems are powerful in such way they can manage other systems. So whomever can control those systems, they will control all of your environment. And most often what we find out there is that it is one single dedicated system that controls everything in the environment. Domain controllers, servers, important or not important, workstations as well. So whomever can get access to that single point of control, they can control everything. So what we need to start to establish, we need to start thinking of splitting that system in multiple pieces, multiple tiers, multiple parts, and starting having dedicated systems to manage those very high important systems we have. So managing Active Directory domain controllers, this shouldn't probably be done by the same system that manage all other servers or other workstations, unless we do trust that whomever controls that management system is our domain admin as well. virtually speaking, that guy or those people are our domain admins because they can manage our domain controllers. So whomever is in charge of managing that part will be in as well having the ability to manage the domain controllers and so forth. So we need to think of that structure. Similarly, we need as well to think of logons, who can access different pieces in our systems. So who can access a domain controller with an interactive logon? Who can access it with remote services, remote tools, so forth? If I get your credentials to your domain admin, is it possible for me to be anywhere in your environment and access those domain controllers and manage them? Are there any restrictions at all from what workstation I can perform a domain admin logon or on what workstation I can do that? Or if I get hold of one of your domain, server admin's credentials, can I just use that freely anywhere in the platform? So that's another thing we need to start to think of, what should be possible and whatnot. This is just a sample. The three tiers here representing the zero is the highest trust level, which is the domain controllers, domain admins. Tier one is kind of a server tier, and then tier two is a workstation. So a domain admin should never be allowed to log on a workstation unless it's a dedicated admin workstation. So why is that? Well, the example Marcus just did, the demo he just did, if somebody managed to hack that workstation, then they will have all the credentials necessary to manage the domain. So we need to keep these things apart. Less exposure or control exposure over most important credentials. That's what we need to start thinking of. So these models are something we definitely recommend you guys to start working with or start understanding. And of course, it's not just three tiers. Sometimes it's just two of them. Other times there are 10 of them, simply because you have 10 very important systems, not necessarily related to each other. So every system per se is has such importance that we need to keep it as safe as possible. So this is a model you can start working with, and you can start, of course, tweaking and building your own version of it. So what should we think of? Where should we start? Different tiers, we should address who can manage what in terms of management systems and accounts. But where do we really start all of this? Some very important pieces to start with, and those are the easy ones, the low-hanging fruits. So first of all, we need to understand that if we're doing system management with one single admin account, if somebody gets hold of that, they will control everything you have, right? So if I can get hold of your admin account, you happen to be a workstation admin, server admin, and domain admin at the same time, then it's only one account that controls them all. And so will I do. So that's very important to start using separate admin accounts on those separate tiers. So once you started defining your tiers, you will start defining your separate admin accounts. You don't want to mix between those admins for those different tiers. So the example Marcus just told you about, the investigation we did lately, many admins were on the same jump station, and those admins had different levels. They had access to different systems, but because every one of these admins was local admin on that jump station, they could easily collect or check on each other's privileges and credentials. So that's what the hacker did. They collected all the credentials on that jump server simply because they were just one of these admins, and then they could control mostly all of the systems in that environment after that. So it's very important not to mix. If you've decided to have different tiers, if you decided to have different people managing my Active Directory, different people managing system X, Y, Z, there should be different admin workstations, different jump servers to manage those entities as well. If not, then you will have issues or risk with identity theft and problems with that. So the second will be having dedicated workstations, the privileged access workstations, or dedicated jump stations. So either way, you will accomplish the same type of results. The next big thing here is that to get rid of the identity dependencies we have in our systems. Now, Marcus didn't really show that, but what if you could get hold of a local admin account, right?
Yeah.
So a local admin account on one workstation might be the same local admin account on the next, and the third, and the fourth. The same story can go on for servers, right? So the local admin account password for server 1 and server 10 happens to be the same. If that's true, then an intruder on server 1 will be able to control server 4. And maybe all the servers in your environments. It's very crucial, very important to have dedicated or unique local admin passwords on your workstations and servers. This is something we need really to start working with if you haven't started that work yet. So Microsoft released a system for that. It's called LAPS, LAPS, Local Admin Password System, which is simply an extension for group policies that will manage those local admin accounts. And it will store the unique admin password for that workstation in Active Directory. And there is an extensive model or a good model of access controls who can get hold of that admin password. So please start looking into that. Please start using that. And we will get rid of that dependency model we've created in our systems since ever we started deploying our systems. So these are to be considered as the step number one in this model. So we start with the low-hanging fruits, and then we start to give ourselves better opportunity to be able to separate these things amongst. So the next step, if we did the local admin passwords and we had unique passwords on those admin passwords and so forth, the next step will be start looking at what happens when we look at our admin access. How do we access those systems, and what should we do when we do that? So first of all, dedicated admin workstations, the privileged access workstation model. I've added the links to documents so you guys can dig deeper into that. So the privileged access workstation is all about don't mix different privileges. Don't do normal day-by-day surfing the net and then managing your Active Directory on the same computer. Because that day you download something, you double-click it, and that something happened to include an agent, a Trojan, then it's game over. We don't want to expose our admins to that type of risk. So either dedicated workstations or dedicated jump stations. We need to have a trustworthiness in the whole chain of command, from starting from the workstation we're using, ending up in the domain controller itself. Number two in this is starting using temporary privileges, the time-based or time-bound privileges. This is probably something very new to most of us. I guess some of you running in a little bigger environments, bigger enterprises, have this thing. But for everybody else, this is quite a new thing. So this is all about you will be granted to be admin for a system or a server or your Active Directory, but not for all time being. So there will be a system set up for you. You can touch bases with that system and say, hey, I would like to become my domain admin. The system knows that you are such user. So the system will grant you that domain admin access level. But not for all time being. You will be that for the next hour or 20 minutes or something like that. So the big picture, the whole idea is that we give you your privileges, but that will be for a limited period of time. Why is that? Well, during that time, those privileges will be exposed on numerous systems. And because we want to protect that privilege level, we will make sure that they are only exposed during a subset of that time. This system was actually introduced in Active Directory 2016. So let me give you a very, very quick demo about that. Let's see. So I'm just enumerating. This is just a regular PowerShell get AD group. Enumerating the domain admin group in this domain controller. And as you see here, it's only the built-in administrator who's part of that group right now. So I will go ahead and define a time constraint. And then we'll do that in minutes, let's say 20 minutes. So just define a TTL value, a time to live value, new time span for 20 minutes. And I will go ahead and add that another, let's see, I will add another member to this admin group. So add AD group member, identity domain admins, members admin. I have an admin guy. And I will attach the time to live parameter to that membership. So let's see.
Good security.
Yeah.
Couldn't make it.
It's null. Okay. Just misspelling. There we go. And then I will enumerate the group again and tell it, hey, could you show me the members? So now we see that we have a new guy been added as member of that group. It's the CN equal admin. But for this guy, there is a time to live parameter, which we started with 20 minutes. So this membership will last for a maximum of 20 minutes from the time we added it. So as we're looking at this in the future, you will see that TTL value will get decreased. These are seconds, right? So when we reach null on that parameter, then the membership will be removed automatically. So Active Directory is now aware of this. We've had similar systems that could mimic this behavior or perform this type of behavior, but Active Directory weren't aware of that before. So they went added somebody to that domain admin group or whatever admin group you decided, and then they went and then removed that somebody from that group after a certain time. But what happened with everything else trusting Active Directory, so the Kerberos ticket we received by logging into Active Directory was stamped for 10 hours. With this, the Kerberos ticket will have a maximum of the time, the smallest time left on any TTL value.
So if you give one like a minute, then they would just be able to use it for a minute.
Well, actually, they will never manage to log in because Kerberos requires a 10 minutes, skew time. So that's just to be sure that we have synchronized clocks. So that log on will not be possible.
Yeah. But it's good. You don't have to take away the domain admins. Just tell me you're going to be it when you need it.
Yeah. So when you need to establish, of course, now I've done this now using the PowerShell tools built in, so you need to have a system that orchestrates this for you. So probably a third-party system. Microsoft's offering is to use the Microsoft Identity Management, the MIM 2016, to orchestrate this for you. But you can do it on your own. I mean, it's just a matter of creating some kind of a web application or something like that and do this in the background. So it's not more difficult than this. Or somebody, you call somebody, and that somebody can do this for you, make you with that elevated privilege for a certain amount of time. So these are the two first steps in the stage two. Now, following this process, or the next steps would be as we go with the remote management or remotely managing our systems, we will start looking into the remote management interfaces, different remote management interfaces. And this time we will start focusing on least privilege or least exposure or lowering the attack surface.
I have to stop you for a second. Mm-hmm. I think the time-based thing is kind of cool. Every time we do an investigation when nation state, there's an organization in China called 3PLA. They are basically the same as the NSA in the US. Every investigation we've been, the first stages when they go from first intrusion and to this lateral movement when they steal credentials, they actually always work office hours until they get to the last phase when they put in their biggest focus. So if you just exclude Chinese office hours from the admins, it would actually decrease the attack surface from that particular threat actor. Just struck me. It's kind of interesting. They would get so frustrated, like they don't have any admins here. Mm. And they're pretty far away, so you can still work daytime here.
Yeah, or if the orchestration system just down to that knows that that particular admin is actually on vacation, so he or she cannot become admin right now. So we need to have an understanding or extended understanding for that kind of operations and procedures.
Yeah, they could check emails, but they're not admin.
Mm-hmm. Okay. As said, the next step will be we're taking good command of our workstations. We know that these are trustworthy guys we can work with, initiate our connections to the most precious, maybe the domain controller in our systems. And then we're not using permanent privileges. We're using time-based or limited, time-limited privileges, one way or the other. Now we need to control the exposure level of our system. So today, I mean, if I jump in into any of your systems, I'd guess in many of your systems, there wouldn't be any specific restrictions for me to access the domain controller or any other server on different interfaces, remote desktop, PowerShell remoting, RPC-based remoting tools, and so forth. So do our normal users need to do that all the time? Is it really necessary that everybody can do PowerShell remoting to whatever is in our environment, or can do remote computer management or remote registry to whatever is in our environment? The fact is that, yes, they can do it, but we know that they shouldn't. So we haven't been doing proper segmentation or proper attack surface hardening on our system. So it's the time to start doing that. Of course, this means firewalling. This means local firewalls, most probably. This means host-based firewalls that are more aware about what's running, what kind of services are running on our system. So centralized firewalls can do some of this. They won't be the best guys doing that. You want to have more granular control. The more granular control is a local firewall. A local firewall integrated and knowing about what services you're running. And at the same time, a local firewall will be a lot easier to manage than the centralized one. The centralized one will look like a big sheet with many big or small holes in it after a while, simply because it is quite difficult to open arbitrary ports, dynamic ports, and so forth. So at the far end, you will end up with quite not so very well-defined policy, but a policy, but users will still be able to do something they are not supposed to do. So control your management interfaces. Make sure you're offering the right type of management interfaces, and make sure that you're offering the right level of privileges to those management interfaces. One thing that is very interesting to look at, a particular piece here, is the GIA, the Just Enough Administration. So the GIA part, this is PowerShell, of course. If you haven't figured it out, just look at the icon. So GIA has been introduced since, let's say, almost 2 years ago, a little bit more than maybe. And the basic idea of GIA is I can access a system as non-admin user, and the GIA will perform an identity exchange for me as non-admin and allow me to perform admin tasks on that destination machine. So I can connect with my non-privileged user to a remote server, and I can start doing things that normally requires local admin privileges or delegated privileges on that server, like restarting services or changing things, maybe in Active Directory and so forth. Yeah, or stealing secrets. So if we don't have this limit, then apparently, I mean, Marcus could do a lot of things with PowerShell. So PowerShell is getting more and more popular amongst attackers simply because it's a very nice and open framework. It makes things a lot easier, both for admins and intruders. So why not using that?
It's actually kind of funny, Blum, when we're doing investigations too, because hackers used to have these closed-sourced binaries. Now, when we find their tools, it's just PowerShells. We can see exactly what they did. It's kind of nice. So they really educate us. They are into open source for real now. They don't think about it so much, but
yeah,
we see exactly what they do.
So forensics gets a little bit easier as well, as everything is turning over to be open source.
Yeah,
and PowerShell.
If you have the right logging, or if you can watch them while they are doing it. Mm. If you don't have any logging and you come in too late, then, of course, you have a problem. Mm.
So as I said, the basic idea is I rely on PowerShell remoting. I use non-admin credentials. I'm just connecting as a regular user to a specific endpoint in PowerShell. And that endpoint will tell the system exactly what commandlets, what commands I'm allowed to perform, and what type of identity. So it's actually going to create a dynamic local identity for me that suits the needs to run these commands or commandlets. It will give me enough permission to do that. And of course, the point Marcus made, just logging is very crucial here. I need to have the correct amount of logging, correct amount of auditing in this system. So unless that, I won't know who did what on that system, right? So I want to know who connected and what did they do when at the time of connection. Just to give you some hints about how that looks like, let me just go to this website. This is GitHub. So just enough administration samples and resources. This has just started. These are some samples has been uploaded or brought to us by Microsoft. So let's just look at some of the simple definitions over here. So this said commandlets, visible commandlets, as you can see here, get Windows feature, get hotfixes, everything in the Defender or net adapter, net connection, everything starting with that. TCP IP maybe, getting services, restarting services. So this is just an example. And you can tweak this indefinitely. So you can just do whatever you could imagine of. So start using PowerShell. And PowerShell remoting is awesome because we're not exposing our admin credentials on the destination system unless we start starting processes on that system. The other thing, start using Jia together with PowerShell remoting because that's where it gets even more awesome. So we don't even need to have admin credentials on the destination server. We are not admin on that server, but we can still manage it. Simply because Jia is allowing us to do that type of exchange and on the fly instantiating an admin user for us and giving us the allowance to run these commandlets on that system. So if you haven't started with PowerShell yet, I guess I'm not the only guy today and tomorrow telling you start with PowerShell. So please have a good look at that. And I'm not getting any kickback for this. Okay. So another important thing here in stage number two, we need to establish proper auditing. We need to establish proper logging. We need to look at those logs. We need to start analyzing the logs. Drawing our baselines, understanding what's happening, whether you use, I mean, the links in this slide points towards ATA, which is Advanced Threat Analytics by Microsoft, whether you're going to use ATA or you can use something else, it doesn't really matter. ATA is a good product. It's a very nice product aiming at taking care of anomalies with credential theft and credential reuse and pass the hash and all of that. But you can use any other system that can help you understand the logs you have. So Elk Stack or whatever system you can imagine of, or any security monitoring product you might happen to have. So make sure you ship all these logs to that system and make sure you analyze the logs properly to understand what's going on. Why are there new services started on my machines? Why is that PSXX service started on that machine? Why there is a new admin guy started or created on that machine? Why did that account change password and so forth? All of these anomalies needs to be tracked because that's what the bad guys will be doing. They will have the first foothold of your systems and then they will create some persistency in that system in terms of creating services, creating accounts, and making sure they can come back later without relying on the initial foothold they created the first time. So this is something important to establish. We need to have proper logging. We need to understand those logs as well. So whatever system you're using will be just good enough as a starting point. So the final stage here will be elevating on all of that we already had. So what if we start tell that our users must use some kind of a multi-factor authentication, smart cards, or other type of multi-factor authentication. So to be an admin, to get that access to that PowerShell remote endpoint, you need to authenticate a different way than just username and password. We need to be more than certain that you are that legit admin. So let's say if you're using this as a dedicated admin workstation, and we're using virtual smart cards to put your admin credentials on the virtual smart card in this workstation, we're doing two things. First of all, we're limiting your access to the system unless it's been made from this workstation, simply because your credentials, your admin credentials, are only residing here. So if you don't use this, you don't have your admin credentials, which should be a quite good relief for most of our admins, I guess. I don't need to hesitate anymore. Oh, where did I? Is there anybody listening or seeing or tapping my password? There is no password. It's a smart card logon. But it's bound to this physical machine. So why not start using that? So dedicated workstation with multi-factor authentication. Of course, we need to understand that we need to have proper role management, delegation management. So the privilege access management system, the time-based stuff we told you about, we're working with, does require proper delegation model and proper role model. So we need to understand, and we have that as well. If you ask Microsoft, I want to build the most secure admin environment ever, they will start telling you, you need to establish another forest. You need to establish a shadow forest with your admin privileges in it. This is supported in Windows Server 2016. There is something called shadow forests and shadow principles in Windows Server 2016 Active Directory. So you just install another Active Directory, actually a shadow copy of your current Active Directory, and then you will move your admin credentials to that forest. So whomever taking control over the runtime forest, they will never have control over your admin privileges and the systems controlling the admin privileges, which might make sense for some very high-end type of organizations bothering about security at a different level. So I guess for most of us, the admin forest structure will be a little bit of a, I think, imaginary type of thinking, to express it a little bit more. So we can use all the other things been presented, but the admin forest, I guess, will be a little bit difficult for most of us right now. So another very interesting part in this is to start looking at what is actually getting executed in our systems. We've been demonstrating and telling you guys throughout the years, hey, look at what is being executed in your systems. Please use, you remember SRP back in the days, 2003, and then AppLocker, Windows Vista and above, Windows 7 and above. Nowadays, we do have code integrity policies together with the new device guard components in Windows 10, Windows Server 2016. So please use any of that. Establish a policy for AppLocker, and then make sure you have logging, and make sure you have proper log shipping to understand what's been running on your system. So if somebody runs Mimikatz or Metasploit agents or whatever, I would love to catch that information. I would love to see that information to understand what happened in my systems. And there is actually a recommendation nowadays by Microsoft. This is a recommendation by Microsoft. Run code integrity policies on your domain controllers, either with AppLocker or with DeviceGuard.
Yeah. And you can run PowerShell logging so that you can see every command executed. And if you ship that in real time, they won't be able to take it away. Mm.
And if we've done most of that, finally, we need to start looking into our virtualized environments. The guy who is managing my virtualized environment, he is or she is my domain admin. They can at any time perform memory dump of my domain controllers if I have any of these virtualized, right? So, and they can analyze that memory dump with various tools, Mimikatz or anything else. And then they can dump the hashes for domain admin. They can dump the hash for the curb TGT account. They can have a golden ticket in hand at any time and be whatever they want to in that Active Directory. So I need to establish proper protection for those important assets I have. So Hyper-V with the latest offering of fabric protection in terms of shielded VMs, encrypted memory, encrypted hard drives on the flow. This is really nice, really awesome things to start looking at, especially if you're not the one managing your VMs, especially if there is a third party. If you're putting your VM in a cloud somewhere else than on-premise, then it's even more important to do this. Microsoft has started to offer that on the Azure platform, and that offering does exist today with the release of Windows Server 2016 and the Hyper-V component on that server release. So, of course, we need to start upgrading our systems and to be able to take a look at that or use that. So just to give you, to wrap up this and give you a sample, the thinking structure, the type of things, how to summarize this. So let's say, you bother about server support, right? You're a server guy. So how should we manage our servers? What are the primary, secondary, and if we can do it this or that way? So The primary method we will be using, or we will be recommending here, is to use tool-based support, that is remote tools. And especially when we start telling this has to be a network-based logon, type 3 and nothing else. Why is that? Because we are, by using network logon, type 3, we're not exposing any credentials on the remote host. So even though somebody is controlling that host, we can still manage it without exposing those admin privs or admin credentials on that machine. So if Marcus is there with the Metasploit agent or whatever, I can do remote registry and he will not get my privs. I can do remote computer management or remote PowerShell and he will not get that those privs. But if I jump in using RDP, it says primary interactive, this guy. So if I'm jumping in with just regular RDP, standard RDP is forbidden. So I have to use restricted admin or the new remote credential guard, any of these two. Restricted admin is available in 2012 R2. The new remote credential guard is available in 2016 server and Windows 10. So by using that, then the attacker will not have any chance of grabbing those credentials I'm using. Just give you a quick demo about this. Oops. So log on. Singular LSA colons. So this is an, let's say this is an attacker controlling SRV5 in this case, and then he or she can run these commands with Mimikatz and extractor credentials. This is the local logon. And then there is an admin guy managing the server remotely. So let's say we do run. I will run Microsoft Terminal Services Client. I will run that in restricted admin mode. I'm explicitly telling the system, hey, run the client in restricted admin mode and jumping on SRV5. So I'm doing this with domain admin credentials right now. This is not the way you should do your server management, right? I just want to show you the effect of running the restricted admin mode. So this will establish a remote desktop connection to the remote system, and then it's obviously using my domain admin account to authenticate. So I will be logged in as the domain admin I am on that system. And then the attacker will be sitting and waiting on the other side for that domain admin to log on. Let's see. There we go. Now I have my RDP session. I go back to the SRV5. This is the attacker dumping the passwords again. And I just scroll up a little bit and see that the main admin has actually logged in. Let's see if we got that. That's the local admin. That's the SRV5. Yeah, that's the main admin in the domain has logged in. But credential-wise, there are no domain admin credentials on this box. So because I'm using the restricted admin mode, the box is actually not keeping the domain admin credentials. It's substituting those credentials with its own credentials. So an attacker cannot get hold of that domain admin logon.
So that's just the computer account credentials?
Yeah.
Of that computer that you already compromised?
I'm still a domain admin on that computer. I can still manage that computer perfectly, right? So this is just a way to define what's should be possible, what shouldn't be possible, what we should stick to in terms of use this, don't use that. For physical server support, we need to establish the or get the lapse password, and then we can use local admin access. We are not allowed to log on with any domain account and so forth. So this is a suggested or a sample for server support. User support will act similarly. Desk-side user support, primarily we use over-the-shoulder. So anything that gives you screen sharing. We don't need to, we won't we will try not to log on with our own credentials. Forbidden, logging on with domain account credentials. So that's the most important and crucial thing. Remote server support, same thing. If we're not on site, use anything that gives you over the shoulder experience, Skype for Business, remote assistance, or any other type of screen sharing. And definitely don't go ahead and use your admin accounts to elevate. Prick the lapsed password and elevate that session using a local account instead if you need elevations. So this is just a sample of, or these are two samples to try to secure this. Basically, the whole idea is to, what can we do, even though an attacker can control our admin workstations, what can we do to limit the exposure and the ability for that attacker to proceed and be able to control and own our other systems in our environment. So just remember this slide, whatever you do, the very most important takeaway from this session is clean source. If your workstation is not clean enough, nothing else will help you. Yeah. Having said that, we'll be here for questions.
Absolutely.
Yes. And I hope you have many of these. Otherwise, I guess you will be able to reach out to us at any time. So just grab our contact information.
Yeah, and I think it's important to understand, if you were to do one thing, one security activity in your entire enterprise, this is what you should do. If you start looking at administrative exposure, then you will increase security. Much more than doing scans on your web servers or updating your antivirus and all that stuff. This is what's going to matter when you get a real attack. It's even more important than patching a modern Windows Server 2012 R2, for example. There aren't any remote code execution exploits out there for core modern Windows. You can maybe do denial of service, but you won't be able to compromise it. With weak credentials and dependencies, it will make a change. So that's the one project. That's why this session is so important. It's more about mythology than cool tools. But there are a lot of very nice functions built into Windows. So take this presentation and look at the stuff Hassan was talking about. And download them, look at the stuff, and see what you can implement. That will really make a change. So guys, formally, we have open for questions later. But if you need to run off, thank you so much for listening.
Thank you.